Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. You know, I'm not going to putter around here at the beginning. I'm going to let you know what this show is. Oh, and by the way, thank you, the many, many of you who have been buying the new audiobooks. Amazon, Audible, you can get them there and download them. You can buy them on the website if you want some hard copies. USBs, rocking and rolling. www.threadswestseries.com. I'm getting great comments, and I'm glad to know that it was not just the author that was enamored of the readings of these books. They are terrific. Okay, enough of that poobah stuff. Here's what we're going to do on the show today. We're going to continue, but with a very interesting twist, and this is what's happening in the UK using taxpayer dollars to fund terror. We're going to continue with this series I began last week. Last week, we talked about the Islamic Center of Kansas City and its $2.7 million that it's gotten and funneled to Hamas, etc., and the spidery network of care and Muslim Brotherhood that it, along with 300 other mosques in the United States, shall we say, finance with our tax dollars. If you haven't listened to last week's show, please do. This week we're going to continue that series with a little diversion into what's happening over in England and where that money is going. Next week we'll be back on the mosques, probably the San Diego mosque. I mean, you could take your pick. They're all over the United States, all being funded by you and I. It's terrific stuff. Okay, then I'm going to talk a little bit about Trump and the week that he's had, and I got a funny little thing I'm going to inject from Ted Nugent, who, by the way, I've interviewed several times. Just type in the search bar, Ted Nugent. Those interviews will come up. We're going to be talking about Claire Lopez in the context of Islamic terror today, too. And I've interviewed her. She's one of the foremost experts on Islamic terrorism in the world, former CIA operative. You spell her name, by the way, C-L-A-R-E, Lopez. You can put that in the search bar, listen to those shows. And by the way, that was 3 years ago. Okay, we're going to be talking about today also the economics of terror. You know, all you libs, you progressives who like to listen to me because you just can't stand me, and how you decry the spending and military and how that's diverting money from all these wonderful social programs and schools and hospitals and, you know, all that stuff. Well, you know what? You're just flat wrong. In fact, the cost of terror is far more than the cost of stamping out terror. If you really want to get your social programs back on track, not that we're not spending enough on them now, but if you want to spend more on them, then you need to root out and destroy terror. I'm going to prove that to you today with dollars and cents. This is an approach that you have not heard before. This is a look at terror that you haven't looked at before. This is not just the human cost, the suffering, the death, the maiming, the terror of it. This is the dollars and cents of terror. This is the other prong of the terror war that nobody wants to talk about, and certainly not Barack Obama, who's so concerned with $4 million per prisoner at the Gitmo training camp. And I'm going to give you a metaphor, all you left-leaners out there who listen to me. And by the way, did you know my listenership went over 400,000 last week? Thank you very much, listeners. I appreciate that. That's a new milestone. But all you progressives and libs that listen to me, this, I think this little economic treatise on terrorism and what the real cost to your beloved social programs is, and it's not the military, it's not rooting out and getting rid of terror before it strikes. I hope a light bulb will blink. I hope. And we're going to talk a little bit about today, too. We're going to talk about Obama. I'm going to bring some facts to light just in the last 10 days that the mainstream media, big surprise, is not covering relative to Islamic extremism and jihadi terror. And bring some other points along those lines, shall we say, to your attention, that, once again, our mainstream media has simply overlooked, you know, shoved to the side, swept under the carpet, omitted from its reporting, because, you know, we can trust the media. Oh, yes. And if I have time, and it's going to tie into the rest of the show, I mean, it will tie into the rest of the show, but if I have time, we're going to talk about what's happening with the VA and the three people who were caught in the fraud that caused death and pain and anguish and suffering to veterans at the VA Phoenix. This is 700 days later, folks. Remember our president's promise he was going to get right to the bottom of it. 700 days later. Oh, yes, and by the way, they're being paid with our tax dollars. In fact, one of these guys, one of these crooks, these frauds, these despicable humans, is getting paid $250,000 by us. You know, it's kind of like funding the mosque. That's going to be the show today. And I'm going to tie it into also with some things that are going on. You know, one of the ways that we're trying to fight terror, you've heard a lot about this, is we're trying to stop radicalization. We're trying to kind of get in the flow of ISIS and Al-Qaeda and other terror groups, their mastery of social media. And I'm going to tell you what some of the groups that I talked about in last week's show that we're funding, like CARE. You know, you got to love it, right? CARE. What they're doing to, shall we say, get in the middle of that process and make sure it doesn't happen. Because, you know, they and our president are so concerned with the values and the health and safety of America and Americans. That's going to be the show. We got a lot to cover. I'm going to get started right now. So, number one, Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump had a difficult week. You've heard about this on the mainstream media. I don't need to repeat all the stuff you've heard about it. I do want to point out, however, that when he said he would not take the nuclear card off the table when it came to anywhere in the world, including Europe or the Mideast, Mr. Trump was doing exactly, let me underline that, exactly what every president since Dwight D. Eisenhower, this is right after World War II, folks, has done, other than Barack Obama, and what a world we have now. This is what every president has done. It's been the position of every president since literally 1946. And that is, you take no cards off the table. And by leaving all the cards on the table, you never have to roll one. So, a little historical perspective for you on this hysteria in the media over Trump's nuclear quote-unquote pronouncements. All right. Along the lines of Trump, I'll start off with a little levity here. Ted Nugent, you should go back and listen to that interview. It was really pretty good. Ted Nugent's 20 Reasons to Vote for Trump. I cracked up. Okay, here are the 20 reasons. Obama is against Trump. The media is against Trump. The establishment Democrats are against Trump. The established Republicans are against Trump. The Pope is against Trump. The UN is against Trump. The EU is against Trump. China is against Trump. Mexico is against Trump. Soros is against Trump. Black Lives Matter is against Trump. MoveOn.org is against Trump. The Koch brothers are against Trump. And hateful, racist, violence liberals are against Trump. He left out Russia. All right. Then he added, oh, you got to love this. So here's some bonus points for why to vote for Trump. Cher says she'll leave the country. Miley Cyrus says she'll leave the country. Whoopi Goldberg says she'll leave the country. Rosie says she'll leave the country. Al Sharpton says he'll leave the country. And Governor Jerry Brown says that California will build a wall. So there's 26 reasons to vote for Donald Trump, folks. Hope you enjoyed that. All right. That, unfortunately, is the end of the levity for this show. So one of the things I will recommend you do, Brett Baer, I have some favorite media folks on a wide variety of platforms, media outlets, TV, radio, whatever. One of them is Brett Baer on Fox News. He is steady. He is factual. He has a great delivery. He has a good sense of humor. I think his interview of Obama 3 or 4 years ago, which was very respectful but tough, was one of the better ones ever conducted of that quote-unquote president. And he has a special, which is airing this weekend, that I actually took an hour off and watched, and is called Increasing Threats and Shrinking Military. You really, really, really need to watch that. I strongly recommend it. It will give you factually to specifics, and includes, by the way, pretty extensive interviews with all three former defense secretaries of Barack Obama, Gates, Panetta, etc. It's really well done, and it will make you think. It really will make you think. You know, I've been railing about this for years, how our military is being degraded, how our enemies are being assisted. You know, we don't arm the Kurds. The Canadians are now arming them, finally. The only effective fighting force on the field. While our president and his lackeys tell us that the way to defeat ISIS is with, you know, Arab troops on the ground. But, you know, the Kurds, the only military force that has never lost to ISIS, we can't arm them. They're fighting with AK-47s against American tanks that our president didn't destroy when ISIS took them, and they were nicely and neatly lined up by the Iraqi military as they fled like cowards back to Baghdad. You know, we see our White House kind of trying to empty Gitmo. I mean, we're down to the dregs of the dregs. In a congressional hearing this week, top White House officials, the guy in charge of releasing Gitmo detainees, admitted that Gitmo detainees have returned to the battle and killed Americans. I mean, this is in sworn testimony in Congress, yet we continue to do it. At the same time, Obama, remember I told you it would not stop at 10,000. Originally, it was 250,000 Syrian refugees, and I'm using the term Syrian because that's what they use, but Middle East refugees from ISIS country were going to be brought to the United States. When there was a big hue, cry, and stink, Kerry and Obama reduced that to 10,000, and then it was 65,000. And then just this week, our president tells us that we ought to take 100,000. That is the best weapon we could employ against ISIS. At the same time, 2 days before, he gave a another speech, big brown eyes staring into the camera, saying that his number one deal this year was to destroy ISIS. Somehow, you know, this just doesn't, you got to remember, these refugees were created by his policies. A 500,000 men, women, and children have been killed because of his policies and those of Hillary Clinton and now John Kerry. And we're supposed to take 100,000 of the refugees that he, in a crisis that he created, he manufactured, that if you listen to Bret Baier's special and you listen to his former defense secretaries, I mean, you can't get any closer to the president than that, he was aware it would create, which makes it a choice, which makes it on purpose. You just can't make this stuff up. I'm going to give you a little metaphor. And you libs and progressives out there in lib and progressive la-la land who listen to me, hopefully this will reach you a little bit, along with the later part of the show, which talks about the economics of terrorism, the unspoken part of the war on terror. Let's say you got a favorite football team. I mean, you love football. This is your favorite team. I mean, like, you know, Sunday is the biggest day of the week for you. Munch, munch, munch on that pizza and rah, rah, rah for the team. And the head coach of that team, who, by the way, grew up playing football with an opposing team, during his tenure, shortly after, in fact, he takes over the position of head coach, there's some nasty people posing as fans who poison the water buckets by the team's bench. And several team folks, several team players on your beloved football team fall deathly ill and or die. They're arrested. There's film of them doing this. They admit doing this. And then several months after they're arrested, the head coach petitions the police department to release them, claiming that if they don't release them, it will just spur more people poisoning the water of your favorite team. If that's a little foggy for you, let's keep going. Let's say the same head coach demands, pressures his top players, including the quarterback, to resign. They're still in their prime. They have the experience of years. They've been in lots of games and won. Yet he pressures them to resign. And then your offensive line, all 300-pound monsters, the best in the league, he gets rid of each lineman that you've come to revere, one by one. And he replaces these 300-pound meat-eaters with 200-pound wimps. Oh, and then he has new rules for his team because he doesn't want to hurt any of the opposing players. From now on, this is halfway through the season, his team is only allowed to tackle with one arm. They can't use both arms. That's the new rules of engagement. Oh, and then he implements another policy, and that is the team is to stop playing at the two-minute warning of each game. That's to make it fair for the other team so that if they're behind, they can catch up. Oh, and listen, before the game, he makes it a policy to give his playbook exactly what he's thinking, exactly what he's going to do, and when he's going to do it, literally, by quarter and by play, to the opposing coach. And through the course of the season, several of the star players who are still left get injured. But the coach is too busy to go visit them in the hospital. And two of your favorite players who still remain after the forced resignations and the replacement of the offensive line, two of your favorite players, because the other teams know that there is no ramifications, are blindsided by late hits after the whistle is blown, and they both suffer broken necks and paralysis. But your coach, your head coach of your favorite team, stands up and tells the league that the players who committed these dastardly, after-the-whistle, vicious hits, who caused permanent injury to these two terrific players, shouldn't be fined because it was just a mistake. And it certainly wasn't indicative of the attitude of the rest of the team for which these nasty players played. You know, I'm kind of stretching this metaphor a little bit, but I think you know where I'm headed with this. What I just gave you in metaphorical terms, football, is Barack Obama, the United States military, and Islamic terror. Substitute the top 200 officers in the military he is forced to resign or otherwise put in purposely precarious predicaments like Petraeus, to the quarterbacks and wide receivers that this fictional coach forced to resign. Compare the murders and maiming at Fort Hood to your two favorite players being paralyzed by late hits. In Fort Hood, it was called workplace violence. In our metaphorical football game, it was called a mistake. I think you get the message, right? I sure hope you do. So, here's some facts and figures for you, which is going to lay foundation for some of the more meaty topics, like the economics of terrorism, which nobody has gone over with you. It simply isn't, you know, it's just not talked about in the media. Okay? So, there were 2,000 plus or minus, that's the average, people killed in terror-related attacks from the year 2000 to the year 2006/2007. From 2008, we all know what happened then, Barack Obama was elected president, until the current time, this is right up to now, 2016, which, by the way, is shaping up to be a record year, unfortunately, there is an average of 28,000. Let me repeat that. 28,000 people a year killed in acts of Islamic terrorism. You know, you don't hear about many of them. Do you know that there was an attack every day this week? Did you hear about the attack on the poor, on those poor people in Pakistan? At a park, women and children on Easter Sunday. Both Christians and Muslims, moderate Muslims and Christians, enjoying a holiday in a park with their kids. 60 plus or minus were killed, 300 injured by a Taliban suicide bomber. And the Taliban goes on the record and says they targeted that park because it was Christian. Did our president say a friggin' word about that? No. There's been other attacks in Pakistan this week. There's been attacks in Africa this week. And of course, we're all familiar with the Brussels attack, which is now going on 2 weeks. I can't emphasize to you at what rate the impact of terror, the deaths and maiming and disabilities of terror, and I'm not counting the people being executed by ISIS within or around the territories of their caliphate, the Yazidis and the Christians and the moderate Muslims. That's not in this number. This number is terror attacks anywhere on the planet. And you know, you have a State Department who, after the Brussels attacks, the Easter Pakistani attacks, the announcement by the Taliban that it was them and they did it because it was Christians, you have a State Department under pathetic John Kerry who says they don't have enough information to know if it was really terrorism. You know, this is like Major Hassan killing 13, wounding 30 or 40 at Fort Hood and being called workplace violence for 5 years. This is the Obama administration, and I'm not making this up, outlawing the words war on terror, jihadi, Islamic extremism, Islamic terror, or Islamist. Consulted too, of course, by CARE and Muslim Brotherhood figures within and without the White House. You know, I did a show, must have been 5, 6, 7 shows ago, and I told you, if you really want to transform a society, transform a country, transform a culture, and transform values, sure, you can do it in all the ways that Barack Obama is doing it. His degradation, both in terms of morale, fighting capabilities, armaments, and men and women of the military, in the continual seeping of cash, in his increase of the debt to $19 trillion, the Cloward and Piven theory. You know, you don't need a revolution to bring down a capitalist democracy. You just need to overburden it with social entitlements. But the real way you do it is through immigration, which is why we have an open and porous southern border, which is why the 11 to 17 million, who knows what the number is, illegal aliens in this country are being given executive authority amnesty. It is why, in my opinion, Scalia was murdered, because it's one of the cases upcoming at the Supreme Court, which, by the way, is a very quick sidelight, on a 4-4 decision allowed unions to keep taking dues out of dissenting members or even non-union teachers' salaries. Of the 4-4 split, I mean, that's enough motive for the unions to have been involved in whatever happened to Justice Scalia. That one case alone, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, billions of dollars to the fat cats at unions. What will somebody do, you must ask yourself, for billions of dollars and to hold on to their power? Is there anything they would stop at? One man's life? Doubtful. Couple that with other things and listen to my show. Listen to my show the Saturday after Scalia's death. You can type it in the search bar there. I got many laudatory comments that it was the most complete examination of his death and probable assassination anywhere in the media. In fact, I did a half an hour adjunct. The show's an hour and a half long. Hour and a.m., half an hour adjunct. All right, I'm going to come back from my digression here. There is Obama's insistence on 100,000 Syrian refugees, which, by the way, just like I told you, the 10,000 wasn't the final number, and the 65,000 wasn't the final number, 100,000 won't be the final number. This is another way for him to affect transformation of America. And in addition, given my little metaphor on the football coach, given the litany of matters I have brought up to you, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of indications, by his direct actions, choices, lack of choices, and failures to act, of, at the least, his Muslim-leaning sympathies, this is a way to bring the Trojan horse into the city of Troy. Have any of you ever read the Iliad and the Odyssey? Fabulous book. You should. You should. So, with that as foundation, let me tell you a little bit about, which will tie right into last week's show. So the FBI was setting up to counter the radicalization of youth and to spot youth who were getting radicalized, a really cool computer game. And this is part of the Countering Violent Extremism, CVE program. Now, let me tell you that it didn't used to be called that. But because you can't use the words jihad, Islamic extremism, or Islamic terror, it is now called Countering Violent Extremism. The Washington Post reported, the FBI designed an unusual game-style website about extremism, meant to be used by teachers and students to help the agency spot and prevent radicalization of youth, say Muslim and Arab advocacy groups who were briefed by the FBI on the program and fear it will foment discrimination against Muslims. The website, by the way, is called Don't Be a Puppet. Its official, or the FBI said, quote, is to keep youth from falling prey to online recruiting by terrorists. The whole program was put on hold because the Shared Responsibility Committees, which consists of various Islamic outfits, including CARE. Listen to my show last week. CARE, the Muslim Brotherhood, the MAS, the Department of Agriculture funding them. Muslim Brotherhood and CARE operatives in the White House and the security agencies, which is maybe why Jay Johnson, another pathetic Obama shadow government appointee, head of DHS, said last week when it comes to immigration that it hurts his heart even to deport hardened criminals. It hurts his heart even to deport hardened criminals. And who argues vigorously to allow refugees unvetted, into this country from ISIS territories. You know, there were similar programs that kind of were implemented in Europe. They failed terribly. So who knows if this program would have been, because right now it's on hold because of this what they call politically correct. This is really subversive Trojan horse stuff. The program is on hold, folks. And what the CARE and other Arabic groups said, in implementing the program, the FBI has ignored history and the concerns raised by community members. Instead, the FBI has relied on fringe groups from within the community. These groups are recipients of government grants used to implement such programs and do not work in the best interests of the community. You know, Claire Lopez, whom I interviewed several years ago, several times, by the way, who's absolutely terrific, and I mean the go-to gal on Islamic extremism. She's a former CIA officer. She's now the vice president for research and analysis at the Center for Security Policy. She's also, by the way, a foreign policy advisor to Senator Ted Cruz. She called the FBI the, quote, real puppet, unquote, being led around through the nose by a, quote, Muslim Brotherhood puppeteer. Let me quote Claire. The FBI originally released the online game in early February 2016, but then under pressure from CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, decided to scrub all references to Islamic terrorism or jihad from the website. The new and improved version now focuses on animal rights activists, white supremacists, and other violent extremists approved for mention by the Muslim Brotherhood. All right. You know, I think we got enough foundation here. Now, for all you folks out there, you bleeding heart folks, let me tell you what the cost, what the real cost of, what the real cost of terrorism is. The cost is not having a strong military. The cost is not finding, rooting out, and killing terrorists, Islamic extremists before they strike, or setting up an intelligence apparatus to forewarn of strikes so they can be avoided. The real cost, folks, is the strikes themselves and the psychological atmosphere, which devolves into economic terms every time there is a successful strike. Let me give you a quote from ISIS. This is right after the Belgium fiasco. We are everywhere. We are capable of striking whenever we want, whoever we want, whenever we want. And that, by the way, was part of their statement claiming responsibility for killing 35 and injuring over 300 in Brussels. So I want you to understand something about terrorism. Terrorism is asymmetric warfare. Okay, this is a war. When somebody blows up your countrymen, that is war. It is no different, except more insidious, than a Russian jet flying over your neighborhood and bombing your neighbor's house. Except with terror, you get an exponential bang for your buck as a terrorist. Remember, there's a number of ways to win a war in modern civilization. You can win a war the old-fashioned way. You just kill more of the other guy than they kill of you, and last man standing. You can win a war by clever propaganda on a scale that couldn't even be envisioned by Goebbels through social media. In other words, by turning the population of the enemy against the enemy itself. And you can win a war by bleeding the other side dry. We saw the best example of that with Ronald Reagan when he bled the Soviet Union dry in the 1980s. And it collapsed, along with, at least at that time, worldwide communism. I mean, America has employed this strategy, but not in the asymmetrical plan or format that the terrorists are employing. One of the things that a successful terror attack allows terrorists to do is to create fake attacks. Think of all the news stories you've heard just in the last year. There was one in LA I can think of with the school system. There was one in Minneapolis. And there's been many, many, many more we've heard of, and hundreds, if not thousands, that we haven't. And this is when the terrorists threaten an attack that they never even intend to carry out, by the way, which mobilizes this huge phalanx, this army of responders and investigators and preventers and security, all of which costs money. So the Brussels terror attack, think about what's happened over the last 10 days. Think about Europe in a panic and, you know, police in like 8 countries running around here, there, doing their raids, whatever they're doing. Think of the cost of all that. Think of the cost of all the extra troops around the government buildings and transportation centers. I mean, the list is endless. You couldn't come up with all the tangential costs. Think of the lost business of those businesses around the epicenter of the terror. Think of the lost tourism. Plane fares, hotels, food, you name it. It goes on forever. It's a huge multiplier. And it is a huge drain. You know, it's kind of like you kill your enemy with 1,000 paper cuts rather than a single dagger. You just bleed them to death.